Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soucy.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msoucy, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on X, at Matthew Soucy. This show is available on iTunes, and like all of the podcasts here at WFYI, available on Spotify. We'll get to my chat with Joe Shearer in a little bit. We break down the film The Iron Claw, because that's what we do here. But I do want to announce the Indiana Film Journalists Association Award winners for 2023. We met on Saturday. Full disclosure, I was in the car with my kid bringing him back to visit from college. So we had a couple tiebreaker things. But anyway, good times were had by all. And we had our announcements made this past Monday. Our Best Picture winner, Poor Things, with our runner-up, Oppenheimer. And our Best Film finalists, the other finalists, in alphabetical order, Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, Barbie, The Holdovers, John Wick Chapter 4, Killers of the Flower Moon, May December, Past Lives, and Robot Dreams. Best Animated Film was Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse and its runner-up, Robot Dreams. Best Foreign Film, the winner was The Zone of Interest, the runner-up, Godzilla Minus One. Best Documentary Film, Kokomo City, with runner-up, 20 Days in Mariupol. Best Original Screenplay, David Hemmingson for The Holdovers. Runner-up, Sammy Birch and Alex Mechanic for May, December. Best Adapted Screenplay, Tony McNamara for Poor Things. Runner-up, Greta Gerwig and Noah Baumbach for Barbie. Our Best Director, Yorgos Lanthimos, I am apologizing for butchering these names, for Poor Things. Runner-up, Christopher Nolan for Oppenheimer. Best Lead Performance, because we combined. The winner was Emma Stone for Poor Things. Runner-up, Cillian Murphy for Oppenheimer. Best Supporting Performance. Winner was Mark Ruffalo for Poor Things. Runner-up, Robert Downey Jr. for Oppenheimer. Best Vocal/Motion Capture Performance. The winner was Haley Steinfeld for Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. Runner-up, Shameik Moore for Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. Best Ensemble Acting, the winner went to Poor Things, runner-up Oppenheimer. Best Musical Score, Ludwig Göransson wins for Oppenheimer, runner-up Robbie Robertson for Killers of the Flower Moon. Breakout of the Year, Celine Song for Past Lives, runner-up Charles Melton for May, December. Best Cinematography, winner was Hoyt von Hoytema for Oppenheimer. Runner-up was Dan Lawson for John Wick Chapter 4. Best Editing, winner was Jennifer Lame for Oppenheimer. Runner-up, Thelma Schoonmaker for Killers of the Flower Moon. Best Stunt/Motion Choreography, the winner was Jeremy Marinas, Scott Rogers, and Stephen Levy for John Wick Chapter 4. Runner-up, Jennifer White and Lisa Wellham for Barbie. The Original Vision Award, the winner went to Poor Things, the runner-up Barbie, and the Edward Johnson Ott Hoosier Award, one winner, one and only, for director Sam Mirpurian for Greener Pastures. So there you go. Congratulations to the winners and runners-up and those of note, the 2023 Indiana Film Journalists Association Awards. I am a part of this group, and I am proud to say that. And one also one of the weird elders. So there you go. All right. Opening in theaters this week is The Iron Claw, the story about the Von Erich wrestling family. So, of course, Joe Shearer, one of the founders of the IFJA, he and I talked about the film last week. And this is a rarity for me because we are still in award season. I'm not sure what we're doing for next week's Film Sociology. It'll be, of course, the last show of the year. I tend to wait until the first weekend in January to do my best list. We'll just have to see how things work out here at this at work. But this is a rarity because this was a film that's for award consideration that I got to sit through and watch twice because there was just something eating at me. Anyway, you'll hear that in my chat with Joe Shearer. We did this conversation last week discussing The Iron Claw. Joe Shearer, how are you? December greetings.
Hello.
Fellow IFJA member and pro wrestling correspondent, I guess, for Film Sociology. We haven't done this in a while.
Yeah, yeah.
But of course, opening this week, The Iron Claw, the new film written and directed by Sean Durkin, who gave us Mercy May Marlene, if I remember right. And it's the story of the Von Erich family, the family of wrestlers who are all dead, except Kevin.
Right. So
it says Zac Efron, Jeffrey Allen White, Harris Dickinson, who I'm trying to remember what do I know Harris Dickinson from?
I wish I knew.
Because, well, he's kind of that guy. He plays David.
Yeah.
And, Beach Rats. Okay.
Okay. Triangle of Sadness.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Yes. Everyone's favorite Eat the Rich film.
Where the Crawdads Sing is also.
That's true. Out. Yes. Hot scrolling here at Film Sociology.
Right.
That's not the first time it's happened here. Won't be the last.
Nope.
So, okay. That's fine. So, this is a film that follows the Von Erich family. There was a group of brothers.
Yep.
We'll get to that in a moment. And the bad endings that happened for all of them except Kevin. So, Joe, you're my guest. Your thoughts on The Iron Claw.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So this is the movie I was looking forward to the most from this season.
Good director.
Yes.
Fascinating cast.
Yes.
Because we've been waiting for Zac Efron to kind of get into grown-up roles, and Jeffrey Allen White is great.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Jeremy Allen White.
Jeremy Allen.
Yeah.
White, sorry.
Yeah. He's been fantastic since Shameless for me, and
Bear,
he's on The Bear
course.
Now,
yeah.
And he's sort of just kind of he seems like a rising star.
I wish he would rise more because Carrie seems shorter in this film.
There was a moment where he jumped into someone's arms and I was like, boy, he looks so tiny. And I was like, they need to protect because Carrie Von Erich was a big dude. Like,
he was
big.
They were, well, most of the Von Erichs were big dudes,
yes.
which we'll get to in a minute.
Yes,
so.
Yeah. So
here's the other thing, and I guess we're prefacing this with our reviews. We've known about the Von Erichs and World Class Championship Wrestling for most of our wrestling watching lives.
Yes.
And there are also a couple of really good documentaries, one about the Von Erichs and one about WCCW, because there were other tragic things happening down in Texas that did not involve the Von Erichs.
Yeah, there are people in this film who appear in this film.
Who have bad endings.
Yes, yes. So, and that's the whole thing that I was actually talking to some of our IFJA colleagues about some of these things that were not wrestling fans, and I was just like, well, yeah, there's they have Bruiser Brody and Gino Hernandez as a tag team at the beginning, and I'm like, that is not a great ending in itself,
No.
But, so there you could really spin off. You could make a WCCW.
Oh God!
CU.
Oh no! Don't do that.
Tragedy.
Or you can check out or Dark Side of the Ring. If you can go
to
Vice TV or on YouTube, you can find Dark Side of the Ring. You get really well made stories about
these
individuals, including the Von Erichs. Anyway.
Yeah. Bruiser Brody and Gino Hernandez also both.
Yeah.
Spotlight.
Yeah.
Yeah. So come to find out. Grown men getting in their underwear and fake fighting each other has led to a lot of tragedy. So
it has. We get a kind of Raging Bull-esque intro with Fritz, the father, who is in the Joe Jackson Culkin's dad school of just bad dads.
Yeah. And it's such a complex relationship too. And that's the thing that I feel like this film's biggest flaw, I think, was maybe caring too much what Kevin Von Erich thought. That's kind of my working theory.
Okay.
Because he was a really terrible father, and they...
Fritz.
Yeah, Fritz was, and they portray him as sort of a mixed bag, I think, here.
Yeah, I think... Well, and I get that, because you have to find some humanity to him, because he was a husband and a father. And by the way, the frumping down of Maura Tierney, not since Diane Lane as Ma Kent, but it's, we've had crushes on Maura Tierney since News Radio. So
sure, yeah.
I'm like, okay, you're the mom, great.
Right.
And by the way, tell Aunt May to call me. So
right.
So the boys are in this, and they wind up getting into the business. Fritz mm-hmm. is a wrestler. He winds up buying his own wrestling organization, mm-hmm. WCCW, and he is basically training all of his boys to be in the business. Now they lost a son at a very, very young age that mm-hmm. they make reference to.
Yeah.
And then you have David, Kevin, Carrie, Mike, mm-hmm. no Chris. We'll get to that in a
yep.
minute. But so they're all being groomed for it. Zac Efron plays Kevin, Jeremy plays Carrie,
mm-hmm.
and so you get to see their rises and the whole thing, but Kevin being the oldest and mm-hmm. oldest living.
Yes.
Yeah, because as I was watching this and I was looking at what the issues I had with the film, I was like, well, this is more of a Kevin survival story as opposed to mm-hmm. Fritz is a terrible dad.
Yes.
That's the secondary aspect of it. So mm-hmm. I kept watching that. And when I watched the screener last week, mm-hmm. there are parts of this film I really enjoyed. They
yep.
captured a lot. The camaraderie between the brothers,
mm-hmm.
the fact that these guys were treated like gods in most of Texas,
sure.
Especially in Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
They shot this in Baton Rouge, which I found out because it looked like the arena that they had, the Sportatorium,
mm-hmm.
it looks just like it.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping
yeah.
it's not CG, but they captured the rock concert aspect of it. This was a big deal, friends, because in the late 70s, there were no girls going to professional wrestling.
Right.
And the fact that these guys, and then eventually the Rock and Roll Express, mm-hmm. they were young, mm-hmm. handsome men who were chiseled and in their tighty whities.
Yes.
And so girls got to go. When my dad was ringside physician in the late 60s, it was all smoky guys in fedoras.
Yeah, yeah. Big, big, thick necked kind of guys,
yes.
you know, that, yeah.
In and out of the ring.
Yes.
So they captured that. They have you get a good insight into the business. There's mm-hmm. that wonderful moment where David and Kevin are talking with Gino and Bruiser about how things are going to go down
mm-hmm.
and the triple drop kicks against the Freebirds.
Yes.
And by the way, the actors playing the other wrestlers.
Yeah.
The Freebirds were cute.
Uh-huh.
I'm glad they got Harley Race's coat, although they could have had curlier hair for
yes.
me. Bruiser and Gino are fine.
Uh-huh.
I don't know who they got for Ric Flair.
Yeah.
And you know Ric Flair offered his services to play Ric Flair.
Yeah. Oh, you know, yeah.
Even though he's 70 years old.
Yes.
They
yeah.
probably could have gotten somebody better. My buddy Jack, that was one of his biggest issues with the film, was the Ric Flair imitation. Yeah, that's a small.
Yeah,
a small
yeah. He, the guy looked the part, but yeah, did not sound it. And it was, and he was basically reciting one of these interviews that are widely available on YouTube. So, and people, there are memes almost at this point where you have to have seen them. And he's saying the lines, and it's just like just not quite right.
Yeah,
but he looked okay.
It was all right. And again, this is a tiny aspect of it. And
yeah.
and so mm-hmm. what we find out in the back in the business aspect is you have to move well and you have to speak well.
Mm-hmm.
And as we find out, and I didn't think Kevin was that bad a promo guy, although that is alluded to in this.
Yeah,
and then Fritz, who by the way, when you're a dad, don't rank your kids.
Yes.
And that's right. It's in the trailer, and it's mm-hmm. here in the dinner scene where he ranks his kids in order and, of course, refers, lets them know it
right.
could change.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And that's,
you don't have a whiteboard at home, right?
With the kids. Right? No. Yeah. It's just not. Yeah. It's like, yes, my favorite children here. 1, 2, 3. It's like, no, that doesn't. Yeah. You
that's
don't
not how
do
this
that.
Works. Yes.
Right. Yeah. You need to, at the very least, you need to pick a different word than favorite. And, that's at best.
You're
at
my Texas heavyweight champion.
Right.
You're my discus thrower.
Yes, just... yes. You can say you're not ready, but don't say I like him better than you because, you know,
so,
whatever reason.
Yeah, so we see that kind of rise with some of the characters. David is supposed to get a title shot, and eventually Carrie was supposed to be in the Olympics. That angered Fritz.
Yes.
And he comes into the family. So, and Kevin gets to actually meet a woman who becomes his wife, played by Lily James. I love Lily James's versatility. Going from Cinderella to
Pam Anderson to an archaeologist who doesn't pull her hair back and now wrestling wife. So, and she's the one that helps kind of, there's a push and pull between, you know, trying to be a husband and a family and more, and just being a Von Erich.
Yeah, yeah. And that's, and that was such a thing that, I don't know, this is the kind of the central problem is that it's hard to fit everything in.
Yeah.
And they, I think this movie could have done with about an extra 10 or 15 minutes of runtime.
And friends, we don't normally ask for longer films.
I was absolutely going to say, that's not something I'm going to usually say. But
And I can't wait for the deleted scenes because yeah. there's mm-hmm. a, anyway, but yeah, I wouldn't have minded this being, because I was enthralled with it,
yeah.
I wouldn't have minded if it were.
Yeah, yeah. And it should be noted that two of Kevin's sons, Ross and Marshall, are currently wrestlers. Wrestling for AEW All Elite Wrestling, which is the kind of the current second biggest outfit.
Third, if you're Jim Cornette,
right? Yes,
but or fifth, if
yeah,
you're Jim
and,
Cornette.
And you better believe they're pushing that right now. They've
oh,
got
yes,
the,
of
you
course.
Know, so that's you know there is that. So you get to at least see the child versions of them, along with something that I should also mention while we're saying that a. Sort of a moment they skimped over a little bit that could have been a powerful moment. Again, another of my problems is the moment where they show Lance Von Erich, the
yeah.
fake Von Erich.
So, yeah, I'm glad you set me up. The two issues I have with this, mm-hmm. and this is from wrestling guy to wrestling fan to wrestling mm-hmm. fan. So, as I alluded to, there was another son. Mm-hmm. It was Chris.
Yes.
And I read an interview with the writer-director, Sean Durgan, mm-hmm. and he decided to morph Mike and Chris together, mm-hmm. which from a narrative standpoint, I understand. They
Absolutely.
Were both too mm-hmm. small. Mm-hmm. Chris was really too small.
Yeah.
If you watch footage of him, I mean, you know, mm-hmm. kudos for him slapping Percy Pringle, but but Chris looked like he was my height.
Yeah.
Or Jeremy
yeah.
Allen White's height.
Yeah, so. he was 5'5". I like looked it up because I was not into World Class at the when he came. I was just kind of peripherally aware that he was there.
Right.
And they were changing, I think, to this, it was like the CWA or something. There were like
something like that.
There was a merger with Memphis with the Jerry
the
King
AWA
Lawler.
Thing.
Yeah, so he was like, but he was there for such a short time. And I read, yeah, 5'5". And,
Chris was my height.
Yeah, and
great.
he also had brittle bones, is what they said. Like he had,
but
he
don't tell that bones. To Fritz.
Right. Yeah, and it was just. He was not destined for that world in a physical capacity.
No.
And still he went because, you
it's
know.
What dad wanted.
Yeah, it's what dad wants. I mean, there was nobody else.
Right. And, so yeah. So there's that part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, they brought in their cousin,
yes.
Lance Von Erich, which uh-huh. kind of went over not too well.
Mm-hmm.
The girls screamed because he was good looking. And everyone's like, that's not Von Erich.
Yeah, yeah.
And that is, which wrestler?
Maxwell Jacob Friedman, MJF is his nickname.
Right.
He's the current AEW world champion, as a matter of fact, if I recall.
It's been a while for me.
Yeah, and so he's listen, like, that guy is very good on the mic, and he's... Like look up some stuff from him.
So
like
he would have to have stammered a little bit to play Lance.
Yeah, yeah, and all he gets here, and there's sort of a to do about it in the wrestling community that he's there. Like, oh, this is really cool. Like, it, you know, he's getting into the movies, but in the final film, he gets a single scene.
Yeah,
there's not even a discussion of who he is, and. That's such a poignant moment, right? Like, and a fake wrestling brother or cousin is not unusual, right?
Look up the Garvin family,
yeah,
or the
yeah.
Roberts
or,
family,
or Arn Anderson, who's
yeah,
not related to Ole in
true.
Any way.
There is that,
and there's you know, so there you, it's that, a long tradition, but here it has such a poignance because there was no one left, you know, for Kevin to team with,
right? And there, so then for me, the question is, mm-hmm. is that I was trying to tell myself,
yeah.
this is the Kevin surviving story,
yes.
as opposed to Fritz is a terrible dad
yes.
story.
Mm-hmm.
So I sort of understand why they didn't go there. Although I can't wait for the deleted scenes; I want to see these.
Yeah,
but yeah, this is what dad was trying to do to keep the company going,
yeah.
and mm-hmm. and instead, you know, and the other part was. And this is now. See, now we're chipping away at little things.
Sure,
you know, like mm-hmm. Carrie winning the title, and he did not lose his foot
that night.
I'm not really giving away a whole lot, but right. that happens later. Uh-huh. But what I think was missing is you could have had Helen Mirren do the little voiceover corrections like in Barbie. The Von Erich boys got more than one title shot against yes. the NWA champion. I think the film pushes it that they get one shot and one shot only, yeah. which is – right to a certain degree, mm-hmm. but when you're the champion, whether it was Harley Race or Ric Flair, you kind of toured the territories.
Yeah, yeah.
So it wasn't just like, okay, David gets to fight him one time and one time only, and that's it.
Right.
The other part was, yeah, Kerry wins the title, but the organization, the NWA, mm-hmm. didn't think he could handle the workload, mm-hmm. and he was hesitant.
Yeah.
So he had a short run.
Yeah, well, and it was supposed to be David also
Correct.
First.
And then died.
Yeah, he died. So it was and that's the whole thing, is it was such an inspirational story at the time for Kerry. It's like he's taking his late brother's place, and then he wins the title. Like, it was very emotional. And of course he didn't hold it long. And
a
it's
couple
like
of weeks.
Yeah, and it's like that stuff, I guess, in the context of the film is not that important, but it could have built something, you know,
right.
if they had taken a moment to been like, you know, other than just like, oh, well, you know, David's gone. So, and they really turned it into a Fritz versus the boys moment where he skips over Kevin to go to Kerry, and Kerry even, I think, argues the point where he's like, no, I'm ready.
Yeah.
And that's, I don't know if that's what it was like behind the scenes, but from an external, from the business point of view, Kerry made sense to me at the time.
Yeah.
And honestly, Kevin, I don't know if Kevin ever did. I mean, I know he wrestled Ric Flair, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
Multiple times. But I think in that moment, Kerry was the right choice. And I think the way they approached it was maybe just a touch off. But, and they could have built that. They could have built the emotion of that. And they really just didn't. They really just went, oh, David's dead. Who's going to plug into this spot?
And I think the last, and I know there was another, I saw another write-up where I think like, especially the last third gets into heavy biopic mode
yes.
of uh-huh. clicking the boxes on this aspect and that aspect.
Yeah,
And so it becomes familiar territory if you're, mm. you know, but hey, if you're like music biopics, that's cinematic comfort food to
yeah,
a certain
yeah.
degree.
Yeah, but, you know, I just think that overall this film, I expected to start watching this. I thought this is going to be rough. Like I'm going to lose it multiple times, and I was never given enough time to really connect with anyone for that emotion to really hit as hard as
yeah.
It
the only moment really is when Kerry offs himself.
Yes,
and the way it is set up there's mm-hmm. if you look up how Kerry Von Erich killed himself, mm-hmm. it's kind of a big middle finger to Dad.
Yeah, yeah.
And so Kerry, and there's a moment with him, and my buddy Jack had issues with the afterlife, yeah. which I didn't mind. I mean, yeah. that's the reunion that they have.
It took me a second because my question there was that supposed to be a real thing, or was that supposed to be like Kevin in his mind?
I think that's Kevin envisioning.
And I think it's the latter.
Especially after, when the little guy shows up, and still no Chris.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's like, it's just, you know, obviously timelines are compressed. Obviously things are, you know, things happen that maybe didn't really happen. That's always to be expected.
And I wonder if, to borrow a line from I wouldn't mind them going into major Bummerville, Texas.
Yeah,
and let us have these moments a little longer. And so even bringing Chris in and mm-hmm. having the concern of he's too small.
Yeah,
and bringing in Lance and. Mm-hmm. It could have added to the Kevin Survivor story if that's what you want to do. But mm-hmm. I can also see the multiplex crowd walking out of it like it's Requiem for a Dream.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just all of the death and suicide. Oh, so
yeah.
Yeah, I think, yeah, you could have gone longer and you could have gone darker, but mm-hmm. that's kind of two wrestling film critic guys.
Yeah, yeah. And that's honestly, that's what I wanted. And, you know, it would have been there would have been a poignance to showing him as a survivor. And there's a, and you know, you talked about Jim Cornette. There's a, the line that Jim Cornette shares that I don't know if it's something I need to share right now, but I'll just say that this line is spoken in the movie, in the film, about him not being a brother anymore, about Kevin,
yeah.
you know, and it's like, and when I had heard that before, with Jim Cornette recounting that story, how he said, you know, Kevin said that to me on the phone one time, and I about like lost it. And it's like, yeah, it's, I could imagine that kind of sadness from someone. And it played differently in the film. That's
it did a little bit. I didn't mind it because he had moved on to a next phase in life. And there's a wonderful photo. There's a wonderful, because it happens in most biopics.
Sure.
You get like real footage of the people at the very end of the film to show you how well they've worked on it. And there's a fun family picture, especially with the little kid.
Yeah.
Which I don't want to give it away, but I'm like, yeah, that's that family.
Yeah.
And you know, Kevin's somewhere in Hawaii, just getting older.
Yeah.
He's being old. So, you know, good on him. And by the way, so Kevin is a fan. Kevin gave his blessing.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin understood the script changes that were made. So I'm like, okay, I suppose.
Yeah.
But I'm still leaning up against the wall. I'm, you know, the guy, the music guy. I'm like, Willie Dixon wrote that in 1956.
That's absolutely
That's
what
totally
we're doing.
Us.
Yeah.
And I get it. So,
yeah.
But I think there were moments where I was enjoying it so much. I was like, oh, I really want this to be The Wrestler. I'm sorry. And The Wrestler was my favorite film of that year. And I thought you could have gone down that path and be that great a film.
Yeah.
And instead, it's an enjoyable but flawed fixture for me.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's kind of how it is for me. I said it's probably the most profound disappointment for me for this year. And I don't mean that in the sense that it's a terrible film, because it's,
no,
not.
It's not. It's just we had really high hopes.
Yeah.
For it.
Yeah. I just lived that. To an extent, you know, I mean, I remember picking up the wrestling magazine where, you know, it was like Mike Von Erich committed suicide, and and it was kind of crushing. Even though, I mean, Mike Von Erich was listen, I don't want to speak ill of him, but he's my least favorite Von Erich. Like he always.
You do
was.
Not rank the Von Erichs. We talked about this. We just
listen.
Talked.
Listen,
go,
I'm not
Fritz.
Their dad.
You're terrible.
But I mean, you know, like he was, and it was funny because in the film, he comes off as very awkward. But he almost wasn't awkward enough for like the real life version of him,
right?
And because he was, I don't know, he was just oddly pale. He
wasn't as chiseled.
He didn't have the physique.
Well,
which,
and that was
you
the
know.
Thing was that how dare he play an instrument? Even though we find out mom kind of rats out dad about his younger days, which he will not have anything with.
Right?
Holy
yeah.
cow!
Yeah, and that's just such a picture of it of how much Fritz like drove them, because it was like, go off and do your thing. It's like, no, you know, like I was going to be a professional football player, and
they took it away from me.
They took that away from me.
The mysterious them.
Yeah.
That's not us.
Yeah. And then it was like, well, so I was going to become the NWA champion, and then they didn't let me have that either. And now I'm going to take it with my boys. And it's like, come on, boys. And I wanted to see more of him like really driving them and them. And there, you know, there's a scene where Kevin's like, I don't even really care, to be honest. Like, I don't even care about all of this.
Oh, boy.
And and it's so like off the cuff that, you know, it just doesn't really land.
He doesn't want his life.
Yes.
There's for you Texas sports fans, film fans out there. But with that being said, it's my favorite Zac Efron performance.
Yeah.
Way to go, Zach. You've now, you know, you're in grown-up movie land, which is cool. And I was really impressed with him, and especially with the amount of physical stuff these guys had to go through.
Yeah.
It was Jeremy Allen White. He was being interviewed, and they were showing a flip that he did on the Freebirds match. He didn't realize how close his head was to the mat. He's like, oh, I kind of broke my neck in that shot.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. But
if you're a fan of those guys, it's worth checking out because it is their best work so far.
Yeah.
But if you enjoyed this film, there's, like I said, there's a couple of documentaries you can find on YouTube. Mm-hmm. I bought them, says I'm that guy.
Yeah.
So if you really want Wrestler Bummerville, you can check out these documentaries about the Von Erich family as well as World Class Championship Wrestling.
Yeah, yeah. There's so much there. That was such a kind of a fun, you know, it was such a fun territory, and you know, I mean, it was funny because they're, you know, so many people, like Stone Cold Steve Austin, started in Texas and Dallas.
Steve Austin
stunning
days,
Steve Austin, yeah. And, you know, he wrestled the Von Erichs. You know, like all of these guys that, You know, of course, Ric Flair's in the film. I'm sure Hulk Hogan had plenty of interaction, certainly with Kerry when he was in the WWF.
That's right.
And, I'm certain they ran into each other. Like, these are not, like, fringe people. These are, like, they were big stars.
There's even one line reference to some guy who grew up in Vietersburg, Indiana, uh-huh. And the less we talk about him,
he was
a former champ. Yeah, that was a cute pop for those of us that knew wrestling in Indiana.
Yeah. Well, and then there was a reference to Hellwig also, the Ultimate Warrior.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, and yeah, and
what I was talking about.
Yeah. And that was even a popular rumor coming back to Indiana WrestleMania 8. There was a very big rumor that. When the Ultimate Warrior returned, that he was actually Kerry Von Erich, and there are people who still think that, and he was not. It was the same Jim Hellwig, who, by the way, seemed like a terrible human being from what I've heard.
Also, terrible human being.
Yeah, and and then
no wonder
there was
he and Fritz.
Yeah, right.
Sorry, I'm alluding to that. That's fine.
Yeah, so it's it was just a. The connections they had were, legitimate. This is not just some fringe group somewhere.
This isn't like when you have a biopic on a musician and you don't have the rights to their music.
Right.
You're just like, okay.
Yeah.
So I guess it sounds like you and I are kind of mutual on this. It could have been one of the definitive wrestling films of all time.
Yeah.
And it has its moments, but it doesn't quite go far enough.
Yeah. And it's, I'm so conflicted about it because I don't think I voted for the IFJA, the Indiana Film Journalists Awards. I don't think I've actually put initials down for one thing for it, but I was very much like, I can't throw this on for, my expectation was this would be number one for me for the year. And I couldn't do that. I was like, I just can't. It just doesn't hit. But also, I want it to do really well. I want a lot of people to see it.
I'm with you on that. It's like we're still recommending it. Mm-hmm. Just know that it's got some. So of course, like a documentary or a film for me, like JFK.
Yeah.
If you really want to learn more about them, and not just seeing what they got wrong, but if you want to learn more about them, go check out the docs I already mentioned. Mm-hmm. I don't have them off by titles, but you'll find them.
So. Yeah. And the thing that I really wish they had pushed on regarding Kerry was when he lost his foot, like he came back and became a wrestler, and I still didn't. Yeah, and I didn't know even that had happened until after he died, like years after he died. I learned. I was like, wow, really? I didn't know that.
You could have, and there should be a deleted scene of when he actually was in a match and his foot fell off.
Yeah, and that was a thing, and it was like. And Jim Cornette, going back to that Dark Side of the Ring, he mentioned also, like, if Kerry had gone public with that, he would have been an inspiration. Like, it would have been a major thing.
And his dad would have thought he was weak.
Yeah, and it wouldn't have, and it also wouldn't have, put that weight on his shoulders. He would have been freed to, to be that. Who knows what would have happened, Because he could go even with one leg. Like, he still, people didn't really know the difference for the most part.
Exactly.
So...
Yeah. All right, well, there you go, friends. So, yeah, check it out, but it's not Oscar material.
Yeah, it just doesn't hit. I so wish it did. It could have been. That's where my disappointment comes in, is this could have been, like, Zac Efron winning an Oscar. It could have been Jeremy Allen White winning an Oscar. It could have been Sean Durkin, and it could have been
director,
a big thing, yeah. But instead, it's just kind of an okay, fine movie that some people will like, and then people like us will kind of. Wring our hands with what could have been.
Like right now. Thanks, Joe.
Thank you.
That is fellow Indiana Film Journalists Association member Joe Shearer, us breaking down the Iron Claw. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. All right, gang, let's grab a pencil. Let's find out what you've been watching this week. So hopefully you got to watch some good movies that are new, or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. But before we do that, shout out to the Golden Globus Theater podcast. This week they are doing Ricky O, The Story of Ricky, or as they like to call it, Ultraviolence Done Right. So that is happening over at Golden Globus Theater. Go check out their podcast. And this week... on social media, I did ask if you could remember what films you specifically watched on December 19th, which is my birthday. So it was fun to something popped up on social media, and I was reminded that for my 12th birthday, my dad, along with his mom, my grandmother, we went to the opening night of Sharky's Machine, the Burt Reynolds crime drama from 1981. It opened December 18th, 1981, and Grandma Sosi counted all the curse words. Dad and I enjoyed ourselves thoroughly, so nice memory of that. Okay, we start on Facebook. Nothing's on X. That's okay. With Lou Harry, fellow journalist, who writes Dick's the Musical, Killers of the Flower Moon, Zone of Interest, and Jewels. The Sosi family watched Dick's the Musical, and that musical is at a 10. We need it at a 7. Megan Mullally and Nathan Lane were fine. It's based on a two-man show done by the leads in this, and I wish they had better actors in the leads, just putting it out there. Not great. So, it's, you know, there were some that will enjoy the loud campiness of the Dick's the Musical, and I thought my kid would, but nope, not the case. So there you go. Ryan writes, going to watch Iron Claw tomorrow, so that means you'll have to tell us next week when I ask for these again. We're working ahead because of the holidays. David writes, weird, the Al Yankovic story, Good Burger, and Dumb Money, the GameStop story. Eric writes, first views, Major Barbara, the Meyerowitz stories, new and selected, and Midsommar, or as it happened, on December 19th. Oh, you watched that on my birthday, Eric. Thank you. The rewatches, The Hospital from 1971, for the first time in 50 years. That was one of the first dark comedies my father introduced me to. First one was Harold and Maude, then The Hospital, because my dad was a doctor. Great performance from George C. Scott and Diana Rigg. As well, we just talked recently about the death of Frances Sternhagen. She has one great scene as the nurse who is bawling everybody out in the waiting room because they don't have their insurance or medical information while they're bleeding to death in the lobby. So, and I might be doing some George C. Scott film coverage in 2024. We'll just have to wait and see. Other rewatches for Eric, How the Grinch Stole Christmas from 1966 for the first time in a while, and Bachelor Mother from 1939. And then JJ, who follows Eric's pattern, I love it, May, December, Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance, Barbie, which he loved, and Eastern Promises. And our Christmas week watches so far, The Holiday and A Christmas Tale, Dysfunctional Family Dramedy with Catherine Deneuve. That was his December 19th watch. Thank you, JJ. Wow, man. We are going dark on my birthday. This is great. Doug writes, on your birthday, I watched two century-old silent movies at the Music Box with live organ and sound effects. That's cool. Harold Lloyd in Gunshy and Baby Peggy in Kid Reporter. Was it the last time I was at the... No, it was not the last time. Lynn and I were there for the Julie Louis-Dreyfus film earlier this year. But I remember taking my kid to the Music Box for the first time, and they had live organ accompaniment for the film with Gloria Swanson and Rudolph Valentino, the only time they worked together. So that's cool. Thank you, Doug. Also watched The Man Who Knew Too Much, 1956, Bombshell, the Hedy Lamarr story, the final season of The Crown, and from 2023, Air, Maestro, and Poor Things. Dustin writes, The Wolf of Wall Street, Amanda Went to the Library, The Horse Whisperer, and Cruella. Thank you. Garland writes, Claws. Robert Muggy writes, The Mountains Are a Dream That Call to Me. La Guerre Est Finie, The Day Trippers, and The Cassandra Cat. Tracy Forner writes, No Country for Old Men, Old Dads, The Killer, and The Menu. Now, I'm guessing, Tracy, you watched all those from start to finish. I hope so. Thank you, sir. Thank you, buddy. Jessica, stage wife, writes, Last Christmas, Castle for Christmas, and The Hollow. And finally, Patty writes Mr. Magoo's Christmas Carol and Star Wars The Rise of Skywalker. And there you go. I know I asked a day ahead of time normally for your titles, but it's the holidays and work schedules and all that stuff. So there you go. So hopefully you got to watch some good movies that are new or at least news to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. Friends, some words to live by.
Silent Breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's plenty out there. Who knows what's going to happen next week? It could be my end-of-the-year list or something else. We'll just have to see. It's tough being a one-man operation. So anyway, hope you have a great holiday. Hope you get to watch a lot of movies that are great. And hope you get to spend quality time with each other. And yeah, just hang in there, friends. And we'll do this again next week. Thanks for listening. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, Michigan.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!